Thank you. First, I would like to say that I have been waiting 2 months for Tracy to come up here and tell me why this was a good idea. So she somehow did not do that, so I'm still trying to figure that out. But I'm Haley. I'm an alcoholic. I am so grateful to be here. Thank you. For whatever reason, I don't know, but thank you. I'm going to try to at least get to like 10 minutes before crying. I cry a lot, so prepare yourself. all right, so I'm going to try to, you know, let you know how bad my drinking was without fixating on it, because that's not who I am. I'm no longer that person. So let's start with when I started drinking. I was 14, and it was the best day of my life. Like, it was by far the best I had ever felt. Everything that I did that day, I got to be like, oh, I was drunk. And that was whenever I learned that I had an excuse every time that I drank. I wasn't uncomfortable that day. I mean, I was an idiot. I did some really stupid stuff that day. But I never had to be accountable again. And that was my favorite part. And I wasn't nervous. I had been nervous in every situation, social setting, ever since I can remember. I hated school. I remember, like, really young, a teacher asked me to just read my homework. And I was like, ugh, that's not going to happen. I can't. I cannot even have words come out. And they were so nice. You know, obviously, teachers are really comforting. And they didn't force me or anything. But it didn't matter. It wasn't about if they were comforting or if they just forced me to do something. It was me. I was so uncomfortable in myself. You know, it didn't matter. I also had parents loved me more than anything. I was their baby. And I was a very spoiled child. My mom is not very affectionate, so she bought my love. She gave me everything that I could ever want. It just wasn't what I needed. And I was also a slim girl, and she wasn't. So she kind of lived through me. So I was a baby doll. And I would, you know, have all of these different clothes, and they were short. And I remember I got my belly button pierced at 10. You know, like, that was not, I wasn't a good kid. I was the one that you don't want your kid to be friends with. So, but my parents didn't know that. They were, you know, completely in denial. It was like the innocent one. But I was not. I was really just finding any reason to do something wrong. It was like, if I can do something wrong and get away with it, that's what I want to be doing. It was like something about that high that I was chasing. And I was chasing that before I was drinking, after I was drinking. I was just chasing whatever that high was, as well as wanting to be comfortable in my own skin. And I never found it. And I was thinking about it today. 10 years ago, I was a stripper. Like, it's just crazy that I can even be standing up here. I turned 18, and my parents had kind of been like, figure it out. You know, we're not going to always spoil you. You got to do something. And that was the easiest thing. That was the easiest way that I was going to be able to get drinks. I could drink there. I was not supposed to, but, you know, people would buy me drinks. And honestly, I didn't have to work very much because I could make a lot of money and I could go and party for a while. And that was where I started getting addicted to pills, because, you know, being so young, it was a little bit harder to get drunk, you know, at 10 o'clock in the morning. So I started doing, like, I was taking Xanax, which kind of made me feel the same way. And I could take that, like, I had, like, this perfect spot that I would get to on the highway before I would get to work, and I would take it and would kick in right before I walked in the door. So, I mean, I was strategically planning my drinking at 18 years old, and I never knew that I had a problem. I ended up accidentally getting pregnant at 18, like right before I turned 19, and I don't know what it was. I am pro-choice, but I decided that I wanted to have her alone. I've never been with her father. And it was awful. It was the hardest thing because I was not very good at it. I mean, you go into this hospital and they just send you home with a baby and they don't give you any instructions. It was terrifying. But while I was pregnant with her, I had stopped stripping. And, you know, I was like, I'm really going to turn my life around. And I couldn't. And it was really hard for me to ever say that out loud. The first time I ever said it was the first time I told my story, that I was, you know, still taking pills and drinking and smoking cigarettes whenever I was pregnant. I'm not crying yet. So I had her, and I didn't drink for a a little bit after I had her because, you know, remorse. You feel really bad, right? Really guilty. I don't know if you do, but I felt really guilty. So I didn't drink for, I would say, like 2.5 months, and then my friend had a birthday. Perfect excuse for me to go out. This little baby at home, and I'm going out to get drunk. And, you know, I missed her, so I'm, like, crying drunk. Oh, I need to go home. I didn't go home. And I proceeded to drink uncontrollably every single day. And then somehow, like, I kind of got it where I thought I was getting it under control. I started bartending so I could drink, you know, once I got off. And, you know, I would get up and take her to school the next morning. She was in preschool at the time. So I would take her to school. And then I would come back home and go to sleep. And then I would sleep off my hangover. So I was technically still drunk taking her to school. But in my mind, it doesn't feel that way because I have rationalized my entire drinking career. If you would have asked me, I would tell you absolutely not. I have nothing in my system at this time. But I know now that I did. And that happened for quite some time. I got my first DUI when I was 23, maybe, I think. And by that time, I had been drinking and driving since I was 16. I had done more drinking and driving than just driving. So I'm not even close to getting there. It was just the way that I was. Like, I mean, I would drive to work, and then that was the only time that I wasn't drunk. So, I mean, that was the lifestyle for me. So by the time that I get this DUI, I'm like, it's inevitable, you know, of course, you know, it's just going to happen, but it's not my fault, and I'm not even drunk this time. I've been way more drunk, so again, I'm rationalizing, like, I don't even need to be here. I'm, like, demanding on the phone, like, Mom, come and get me, and just, I'll give you the money to get me out. So I, like, pay for everything, just sweep it under the rug. And I'm still on probation, you know, because they leave you on there for quite some time. And before I could even get off of this probation, here's my second DUI. And I had sworn I would never drink and drive again. And I meant it. And I don't even know. I honestly don't know how I got in this car to drive it. Like, I don't know. And I was like, okay, I'm never going to do this again. But then the next day, I did it again. This was before, like, this was the day before my DUI and then the day of. So this was the second day of me drinking and driving that I got the DUI again. And I, like, woke up and I'm like, dude, how am I here again? Like, I'm so sick of seeing this place. I don't want to be here. And since I was on probation, they did not want to let me out. And I was pissed. Like, you ever woke up and someone tell you that you can't do something and you're still drunk? Did not go well. So I'm screaming at you. They put me in the box, you know, like the holding cell. They just, like, locked me in there. And I, like, you know, once I come to, like, this is the second time they've had to put me in there. And I'm just like, I'm ready to come out. Fine, it's me again. But whenever I woke up, I didn't have my glasses. I had lost my glasses. And I'm blind. I am legally blind. I can see to hear, and that is it. So I knew nobody. Like, I can't even see who I'm meeting, and that was very inconvenient. And I mean, it is. It's not a good time. You can't see people, so it's like, it's just, you're very vulnerable if you can't see. And if you can see, don't take it for granted. So I finally call my family, and I'm like, all right, get me out. And they're like, you're not getting out, dude. Like, you're stuck. We don't really want to talk to you. You had a wreck. All right, still haven't cried. This is good. This is going really well. So I talked to them, and I'm like, you know what? It's fine if you don't want to talk to me, but are the people okay? And they didn't know. Like, nobody knew. So long story short, there's 3 days that I don't know if these people are alive. And it is, all right, here it is. All right, this is every time. It's fine. I didn't want to live anymore. Excuse me. I just didn't want to be a mom anymore. And I thought she was better off without me. Which is really, if you're a parent, it's not good. Excuse me. I can't figure out how to cry and talk at the same time. You know what? I made it pretty far. I mean, we've gotten pretty far. So anyways, I find out that the people are fine. But I, you know, whenever I was in my first DUI school, I saw these videos of these people who were just, they woke up in prison, basically. Like, they woke up and then they went straight to prison because they had killed someone by accident. So I went there. And if I could have just got out long enough to OD, like, I had a whole plan. I just needed someone to get me out, and I couldn't. I'm not going to do it again. It's crazy. So while I'm in there, like a week goes by, and I haven't talked to anyone. I've pretty much just given up on everything. So I'm just serving my time. I knew I deserved to be there. And, you know, I can hold myself accountable for something like that because I had never dreamed of hurting someone. It was just me, you know. So I finally pick up the phone and talk to my family, and they're like, so what's your plan? I'm like, well, I guess I'm going to hang out for a little bit. Maybe I'll go to AA or something. And I swear to God, before I got off the phone, they called an AA meeting in this jail. I don't know. I had never heard of that. I have never come across AA in my entire life. And I'm like, dang, this is probably a sign. So I'm going to go and check out this meeting. But even as I'm like walking from like my pod to this other room, I'm like, you know what? It's probably not for me. I'm going to go check it out. You know, we'll see what happens. But there's just no way. And I go in and there's this woman, which I mean, think about it, like I'm, you know, at the worst place possible. I look terrible. I feel terrible. I was like 115 pounds, and I'm pretty tall. So I looked like I was on some very hard drugs that you don't eat on. Everyone thought that that's what I was doing at the time, but it was really just me drinking. I didn't eat. So I go in here, and there's this woman who is just like so put together. I'm like, she goes to church on Sunday. That's not going to work for me. I don't want anything to do with that. I am the opposite of religious at that time. I had had a very, very hard upbringing with my parents. They were very, very religious, and I love them. Not for me. And it's fine. Like, we, you know, it's fine. They love me. I love them. But at the time, I was very, like, you know, you're stuck in your ways whenever you're drunk and, no, I'm not going anywhere around those people. Those people aren't anything like me. And instead of her going in there and just going straight for, like, the good things that happen, if she would have just told me the good things and not let me level with her, I would have never received any of it. Jesus, it's like I want to cry this whole time. But she told me how she was snorting coke off the back of toilets, going home with random men that she didn't know, waking up in crazy places. And I was like, I know that woman. That's me, you know. And that's what I needed at the time. I needed someone to just tell me that they were me. And I was home. And it was the weirdest thing because I was the only one that felt that way. And I know because, like, everybody around is, like, you know, chit-chatting, like, oh, we're just trying to get out of our little cell. We just want to do something else. But, like, I listened to everything she said. And, excuse me, the only thing that I asked her was, do I have to believe in God? And she didn't say anything but no. And that was it. That was the answer. Which is why I always tell people that now. I can't talk and cry. Jesus, you'd think I would figure it out by now. Excuse me. Wow, I've got to hurry up. I got a lot more sobriety than this. So anyways, I get her phone number, and she tells me that whenever I do get out of jail, just like where to go and what to do. She talked to me every time that I called her. She was available for me, which was more than I can say for any one of my friends at the time. They were busy. They were busy doing a lot of drinking, and they just didn't have the time for me. So I learned really early on what a friend is. So I got out, And I went to 90 meetings in 90 days. I probably went to 200 meetings in 90 days, but I definitely did 90. I did not have a license. So everyone in my district had to basically just drive me around. And I got to know a lot of people, and I would show up to meetings early, and I would stay late, and I would just sit and wait for the next meeting if there was one. And I got to know everyone. I made phone calls. I did all the things that were really uncomfortable. Oh, God, being honest with people was really awful. but I needed it. I mean, that's what I had to do. I had to, you know, let people see who I am so that I can become the person that I want to be. And I got a sponsor immediately. She was closer, the only person that was anywhere close to my age at the time. And, wow, I did not want what she had. I thought I did, but she ended up not being my sponsor. After I went through the steps with her, I did complete the steps with her, and she told someone about my inventory and sent it to me on accident. And, you know, it hurt. I think that it was really, that was the moment that I had to decide, am I going to run away or am I just going to be me? You know, I was me. So I, you know, let it go. It's like, whatever. It's fine. People can know me. Like, whatever it is, like, it's not that bad. Like, I mean, somebody's going to end up knowing anyways. It doesn't matter. But it was really early for me. Thank you. Bless you. So, I completely lost what I even said there. What did I say? I did. I got a new sponsor. So the first sponsor did not talk to me as much as I wanted her to, because, you know, I needed a lot of help. So I got a sponsor who wanted nothing but to talk to me and tell me what to do, and turns out I didn't like that either. So I don't need someone to be my God. I just wanted them to help me find my God. And it turns out I found God while I was in jail. I did steps 1, 2, and 3 in there and thought I needed to do it again, but really nothing has compared. I broke down, I asked for help, and I woke up and I was different. It was the white light experience, and I have never wanted to drink like that ever again. Like, there's always been those moments where it's like, oh, drinking would be easier, but it's still never been the craving that I had every time. Ever since I can remember, I've never felt that way again. So, I mean, I recommend, you know, whatever works for you. It's not always that you have to meet God with your sponsor. So I, you know, obviously it didn't work out with that sponsor either. And it's funny, I came into the rooms and I was hanging out with people, and I met this guy who had 500 years of sobriety. And he's been there the whole time. You know, he would give me the rides, and, you know, my first service position, he, like, somehow, I don't know how I ended up in the service position. I'll tell that story in a second. But I had no sponsor for like 6 months. I did have another sponsor in between there, but, you know, she's still my best friend. Nothing bad about her. But so I didn't have a sponsor for whatever happened with her. And I was like, you know, you could be my sponsor. And he was like, no. I know you. New. And he's never said yes, and he's been my sponsor for a long time now. And he can't fire me because he never hired me. It's been really fun. but my first service position, like I said, I had always come early and left late, so I always felt like I, you know, had a responsibility setting up the meetings and being a part of, and, you know, even whenever I wasn't sharing in meetings, that was my contribution. I always try to contribute what I can, and I obviously didn't have money to contribute either. but I picked my home group, and it was like this big home group with all the ladies in the district. I was like, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be with all the ladies. Gotta be with the ladies. And it wasn't. I went to their business meeting and was like, wow, I don't know if I'm meant for any of this, because they just argued a lot. Like, everybody. I'm not just, it wasn't just a women's meeting, don't get me wrong. But there was just a lot of not agreeing. And I thought that's just what this was. And so, you know, me not having a car, we're going to dinner after, like, a Friday meeting. And I'm like, I'm just going to wait for you guys to finish your meeting. And it's fine. I'll just, you know, be over here. They're like, you can sit right there in the back. It's fine. And before I left the meeting, I had a bag of $2,000, and I was the treasurer. I had 3 months sober. These people are insane. Like, what are you thinking? I don't have a job. I don't know what I'm doing with anything, and you're just handing me money. I don't even know how to set up a bank account. And they're like, it's fine. Here's the number. Call him. He'll help you. And he talked me through it. He took me up there. Like, we set it up. It was great. I had such a good time. And I did not meet any of the requirements. But let me tell you, I have not met any requirements for any service position that I've had. I didn't have enough whenever I became GSR. We didn't have an alternate, so I just swooped right on into GSR. I don't think that I met the requirements for DCM with like length of sobriety, but I had the service because of, you know, everything that led up to that. So I just rolled right into that. There was no alternate. So, or there was, but they didn't, they weren't able to actually like go out and do the commitments of it. So we're just teamwork in it. So it's been insane. I have no idea how these things keep happening to me. I don't ask. It's just people keep telling me that I should do stuff, and I do, and I don't even know that I've ever said no. It's worked for me. But this has been the best. I'm doing really good on time. This has been the most rewarding thing. I mean, like I was saying, to go from 10 years ago, I was a stripper. 5 years ago, I wasn't sober. Like, this is insane. I don't deserve this. Every time I think about my daughter, I always want to cry. It's insane. I love her so much. Obviously, she's never heard my story. She doesn't know that I was high when I was pregnant. I'll tell her that when she's a little older. But she has a mom who has a career. It's the craziest thing. Never had a career. I was a bartender. And I got sober and decided that I was going to work at Waffle House. And I was going to learn how to cook breakfast because I had never really been up for breakfast. So I was going to learn how to do that. And I did. And it was just like cooking in jail because I was cooking in jail too. And the kitchen is just as dirty in there. So I had a great time. And I knew how to do it. I knew how to clean the floors. Like, everything was the same. It was a good time. Until, you know, fast food and Waffle House set in, and then I'm like, oh God, I'm working at Waffle House. 25 working at Waffle House, not making any money, but I was doing community service, and I had time for a meeting, and I had time for my, you know, sobriety. That's what I wanted. That's what I was focusing on, was my sobriety, so that I could get my daughter back, because I did not have her because I couldn't take her anywhere. What was I supposed to do in an emergency? I couldn't do anything, so I had to make the decision to give custody over. And so I'm working at Waffle, and I meet this woman from L.A. She is so fancy, and I just love everything about her. She's loud. She has the personality, and I have 6 months, maybe. So I'm like, don't look at me, don't talk to me, don't see me. Like, I was very insecure. And she showed me how to find my voice. And she was my sponsor for a very long time. And so, obviously, while she's my sponsor, I'm telling her about Waffle House. And I never complained about, you know, it is what it is. It was just, well, Waffle House. So the things that are happening. And one day she's like, you know what? I think that you would be really good at what I do. I feel like every time that we talk, we just click, and I think that you have the same mindset that I do. And I just found a way to harness my crazy. So it's not like, you know, we change. We don't change as people. Like, we still have the same person in there. It's just getting the crap out of the way. And I went to work with her, and that was why she couldn't stay my sponsor, because you can't do all of that. You can't be best friends, sponsor, sponsee, boss. Wasn't good. So I kept her as a friend, and still my friend now. I work with her actually right now, and I have a whole career now that I can, you know, I can donate as much as I need to, time, energy. I work from home, so I can, you know, I can be at events like this. I can give my daughter a life that she deserves. Well, not I feel she deserves. She probably doesn't deserve quite as much as I think she deserves. But she's amazing. She's incredible. And I've gotten to watch how it affected her. She was five-ish, I guess, when I got sober. I have no idea. I don't know how to do the math on that one. She was young, okay, little kid. And she was insecure. And I didn't realize that me getting sober and me being able to work through all of my trauma and having conversations with her and talking her through her own stuff instead of, like, you know, I was kind of mean. I mean, I still have my moments, don't get me wrong, but definitely not as mean as I used to be. I used to be very hard on her. I was very strict. And now I can, you know, I can have a conversation and we can talk through whatever she's going through. And she is the most outgoing person ever. And it's incredible because, I mean, like, I am the influence with that. And you just don't think about it. Like, because, you know, the whole time that I was drinking, I still made sure she got to school on time. I still made sure she got picked up from school. And I made sure that she had stuff. And she has a lot of, I have a lot of family that wants her all the time. So, I mean, she's very, like, she's well off. She has a bunch of people to love her. But I didn't realize that, you know, she's looking at me. She don't look at them. She loves them, but she's not looking at them for the guidance. And I'm just really grateful that I can be the person that I am for her. And she doesn't really remember me drinking. So if you, you know, are just getting sober and you don't have your kid, I have her all the time. And let me tell you, sometimes I don't want her there. But, no, the point is, it all goes, whatever you put in is what you're going to get out. And I put in everything. I put my recovery first. And it was hard to make that decision instead of trying to just balance everything and just, like, jump out of jail and decide that I was just going to be a mom and then I'll go to meetings whenever I have the time or someone can take me and I have a sitter. I didn't. That just, it didn't work for me. I had to put my recovery first because I didn't know how to be sober. I knew how to, you know, get her to school. So I let someone else take the reins on that, and it was a really big blow to my ego, but it was the best thing for me at the time. And it gave me the opportunity to actually become part of my community. And I mean, it's like no matter what, I've never missed a meeting. Like, I've never missed anything. Every time that there's been something in the way, it just gets out of the way. Like, I didn't have a license, but I never missed a meeting. I mean, there's literally days and days and days in a row that I was going to four meetings a day. And it was just incredible that there were even four meetings in a day because we don't have those in my district. So it's been a very, very long ride for me. Service-wise, I have definitely noticed that, you know, me jumping straight in, I was one of the youngest people in the district at the time, and it was different. I definitely feel like my maturity has come from, you know, taking that instead. I tried going to Atlanta meetings, and nothing against the meetings. I love the meetings. It wasn't for me. It just was not what I don't care to be around people my age. It doesn't matter. I want sobriety. I want real sobriety. I want what everyone in my district was showing me how to have. That's what I want. That's what I try to achieve. And I've noticed a lot more younger people. Most of them are over here. They decided to come down here, learn about service. It's incredible. But, you know, you just lead by example. That's all. Like, it's, we do service here. That's it. There is no, you can or not. We do service. So do some service, you know, go and do this and do that and you'll stay sober. And it worked. Obviously, you know, working with other alcoholics, that's great. Service has just been a lot of my sobriety. I didn't have a lot of experience with working with a lot of sponsees since I wasn't in Atlanta. Every person that would get sober, there was a lot of women who, you know, would come in and get sober, but they're like, this girl, she's 25. Like, I don't know if she has anything. And that's fine. You know, like, it did not affect me. I'm sober, you know. I found a way to stay sober, and I did what I needed to do to keep it going. And this has been it for me. Everything. Every time someone has asked me to do something, I try to make sure that I can. If people can't do things, there's been a couple people. It's not that I don't think that they're capable of coming down here, but our district has, we voted to pay for people to come down here who, you know, couldn't afford to stay in the hotels or, you know, just didn't really want to. I mean, some people don't want to spend $100 to stay here for a night. It's fine. So we wanted to make sure that everybody would be able to come down here and learn everything that they can to get the most out of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I'm really grateful to be part of a district that could do something like that. We had the extra money because we stayed in person, because that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to be in person. We wanted to see people. We didn't want to cop out and sit at home in bed, you know, because I will. I'll do that. I have done that many days working, so I'll do it for a meeting. Zoom wasn't, it wasn't for me. So I was definitely one of the people who wanted to be back in person. So I'm really grateful for this place. I love it down here. I'm excited for everything to be in person. I am doing great with time. This is incredible. Time stopped once I got over the crying. but I'm super, super excited to be here. It's been leading up to this moment. The first time I told my story, I you were saying, my friend has the same sobriety date, and he found out that we had the same sobriety. He had more years than me. But he found out, and he was like, that's what you were doing. So there's your goal. Stay sober till your first year so you can tell your story. And it was the most overwhelming thing in the world. And I had never been to this location because they had moved their home group. So I couldn't size up the room, okay? Not good for me. I'm crazy. And the same thing happened here. I've never been here. And it's so funny how stressed out I have I've been about this. I don't think I was breathing most of today, so it's fun. I'm trying to think. Oh, funny story. I wanted to make sure that, you know, I do stress service. It does keep me sober. But just recently, I had this profound moment where my friend was telling me, because we relate on service. That's all we do, service. And he was like, you know, me and you we need a lot of AA, but not everybody needs quite as much as we do. And it was the first time that I had ever really been like, wow, I might be a little too hard on my friends, because I'm not very good, because I'm like, well, if I can find the time, you can find the time. That's all. We got the same amount of hours in the day, figure it out. And I mean, that's just been how it is, you know? I don't know. I just wake up and then we do and then we don't. And I don't know. I think that's the crazy for me, is that I sometimes do a little too much. My sponsor will tell everyone in here that I'm not very good at balance, and still pretty insane. And I'm sure that he wants to come up here and tell all of you how stressful I have been on him. But you know what? He is also grateful because he's definitely not going to drink with me. about that. So he is a male sponsor. And I did try my best to stay with women because it is recommended. And I do understand why it's recommended early in sobriety. So you don't, you know, relationships and weird stuff. And I also got a lot of junk out of the way. And whenever I asked him to go through the steps with me, it was just to enrich my sobriety and get anything that was still left over out of the way. And I don't think that I would have been able to do that super early. Like, I don't think that my first round going through the steps, I would have been able to do that. So I still feel the same way about women being with women. I think that there's a level that only a woman could understand me, which is why, you know, my previous sponsor was so good at understanding the level of crazy that I am, because I don't want to change some things. And, you know, there's a lot of people who I like to argue with. One of them sitting over here, Mark, our archives chair. I learned kind of how to argue and to have an opinion and, you know, to look people in the eye again. Like, honestly, I don't think he even knows that, but I learned a lot about myself just being able to disagree with him. So thank you. Love you. There's so many people that have contributed to my sobriety that I'm sure they don't even realize. It's the crazy thing. You really don't know what you're doing until they tell you. But I mean, obviously, I don't feel like I'm doing anything for anyone here, but I am standing here, so I did it. I think I might be about done. Let me think just for like a second, because I'm sure I'm going to regret something that I didn't mention. I don't think so. I think we covered everything. Thank you guys so much.
You got it cut, Lee.